So I've always believed that there's so much correlation between life and sports. When I was a kid, I've always been affiliated to playing sports and being active, whether that's being in the gym, lifting weights, embodying the life of an athlete, playing basketball, learning how to swim, and playing tennis. But as I grew up, that's when I began to understand that there's so much to just wins and losses. There's just so much more to the scoreboard up there. And I think the common denominator, regardless of what sport you play, is that there's so much things that we can learn from the sports that we love and learn how to navigate from those lessons, navigate through life itself. And on this episode, there's no better person to have a conversation with regards to just success and failure in sports. And that person is the head coach of the Ateneo Blue Eagles, 3-time defending champion. He is also the former national head coach of the New Zealand basketball team, and his name is none other than Coach Tab Baldwin. I'm so grateful to have this opportunity to sit down with him and just have a conversation with him. I've long wanted to have him on the show, and on this episode, we discuss a lot of things. From we covered COVID-19, how to become brave, how to not really succumb to fear. We also tackled about his entire coaching career, his ups and downs, who his best mentors are, all the life lessons that he just learned, and who he is as a person outside the basketball court. So I really do hope that you enjoy this podcast, and be sure to subscribe to the Everyday Athlete podcast and enjoy the show. Welcome, Coach, to the Everyday Athlete podcast. I'm so delightful that you're spending time with me today. And I just want to know, like, what's going on with you right now, especially that we're experiencing this pandemic?
Well, actually, not a lot. And I think I'm in the same boat as my players and other coaches and a lot of people around the world. You know, we're waiting for this thing to be resolved one way or another, either through let's just get back to work and you know, deal with the ramifications of the virus, because the economy can't sustain what's going on and it's going to have a greater impact than the virus itself. Or we develop better treatments or even potentially a vaccine, which I think is probably a long way off.
Do you see any hope when it comes to, you know, transitioning from this period, or do you have any suggestions or advice to the institutions that actually govern the sporting community when it comes to, you know, maybe starting with games or whatnot?
Well, of course there's hope, you know, because we're going to conquer this thing as humanity one way or another. Either we're going to learn to live with it, as we have learned to live with plenty of other viruses and assaults on our physiology from nature. We're going to get the better of it. And, you know, my advice is that people need to educate themselves. I think you need to understand your opponent. And this is something it's integral to sport. And right now we have a different opponent. We have something that is invading our bodies. And I've heard, you know, many leaders around the world refer to this as a war on coronavirus. And in a sense, I agree. It's obviously a different kind of war. It's an opponent that is very clear in what it's trying to do. It's very scientific in what it's trying to do. It's not a tactical beast like, you know, fighting nation to nation or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I think it's extremely important that everybody educate themselves, that they don't just sit back and rely on information that comes through the media. Because, you know, I think one of the things that concerns me about this whole scenario with the virus is how afraid people become of something. And, you know, if you're any student of human nature, anytime you become afraid of something, you become controllable. People can manipulate you through your fear. I honestly think that this is not something that we need to be so terrified of. It certainly is a danger. And you know, when you study it and you read about what's going on and the clear data that is available, not the mainstream media data, the clear data shows that there are certain categories of the population that are definitely at risk. And we should be protecting those people, and they should be protecting themselves even more importantly. But I think the vast majority of us are not at risk at all. We might get sick. We might get a fever for a few days. And in some cases, tragedy is going to strike. But that happens irrespective of the virus. And I don't believe it's something that we need to shut the world down to prevent. So, you know, again, going back, my biggest advice is educate yourself. And then you're not going to be, I think, subject to being so afraid and therefore so able to be controlled.
Yeah. Coach, let us now transition from, you know, from this COVID-19 to basketball itself. I think the most fitting question that I want to ask you first is, you know, you've probably contemplated a lot of things during this lockdown, but maybe have you ever questioned yourself, what is the difference or what actually gives you fulfillment when it comes to coaching?
Not really, because I'm very satisfied. You know, it's a 40-year career for me you know, 50 plus in terms of, you know, my involvement in basketball. And I've always felt, and I still feel blessed, you know, to have this life that I've had, this career that I've had. And I think, you know, when you self-evaluate and realize that you're the benefactor of what's going on in your life, then there's really no reason to second guess that. The thing that I, you know, with all the time to contemplate, as you allude to, the thing that I think about is, how do I better give back to the game that has given so much to me? How do I better honor the game that has given so much to me? Because basketball is a passive thing. We either use it, abuse it, or honor it. And for everything that it's given to me in my lifetime, I certainly feel a very strong need to honor that. And I think the best way to give back is obviously to the players who the game is for, you know, because, you know, right now it's, you know, my time has come and gone as a player a long time ago, but my players are still very much, you know, living their dream. And so how can I help them do that? And that's what I think dominates my thinking.
To be honest, Coach, I actually watched an interview that you did with an anchor or a host from ABS-CBN. I forgot. But like you said, or you mentioned that, you know, winning is actually more about them than more about you. And it feels so gratifying on your part to see them from the sidelines and for them to just enjoy the fruits of their labor. And so from me, hearing that from you is actually something that I want to model, because I myself, I'm a coach as well, but, you know, I'm not a basketball coach by any means, but like, I think the common denominator between both of us is that we actually help people when it comes to achieving their goals. So that, you know, I think when I heard that from you, it gives me that, you know, I actually learned something from that, because whenever I see people, you know, moving a step closer towards to what they want to achieve in terms of what they want, that also gives me, you know, a sense of gratification and, you know, a sense of fulfillment as well.
Absolutely. And you know, I didn't come around to that way of thinking as early as I should have. It's probably something that's evolved rather rapidly in the last, you know, 5 to 7 years. And when you consider the weight of that up against how many years I coached, I actually feel compelled to go back in history and speak to many of my players and apologize that I wasn't, you know, more there for them. I was more there for me to build a coaching record, to build a coaching career. And now I believe I don't even have a coaching record. I don't think that it's appropriate speak in terms of my wins and losses, because they actually aren't mine. I didn't do all of the work on the court. I didn't put the sweat in. I didn't bleed for my teammates the way that the players did. And so the record actually belongs to the players, and the victories and the defeats more so belong to the players and the experience of their careers. And I take great joy now, great satisfaction of sitting back and watching everything that they take out of their experience in sports, not just the winning. Of course, the winning is more fun and more exciting, but it's the growth and it's the education that players get from competing and playing something that they love. And if I can help them, you know, elongate their career and enjoy it more, then my involvement is much more meaningful than just talking about how many wins I've got or championships or anything like that.
Yeah, I think that's a good segue also when it comes to you coaching this collegiate team, the Ateneo Blue Eagles. And I know that for some, you know, years ago, you didn't see this coming, but you just saw this as an assignment that was given to you. But, you know, I think whenever I see you guys play, there's this different element that comes into my vision. It's like you guys are a really, really a good team. Like, you know, you are, in terms of chemistry, in terms of how you build that team, it's so well coordinated. You know, I think and I believe that more than anything else, as a coach, you have instilled not only basketball skills, but also you have taught these players how to actually, when they go out and step outside of the basketball court, they have this sense of humility and self-respect for one another. And that's, I think, the most important thing that you've given to these players as a gift.
Well, what we're trying to do, you know, what our coaches actually do work very hard on, and yes, we work hard on basketball, but as I've said, the players, I think, really are the ones that put the real work in. Guiding and directing skill development is not that difficult as a coach, and guiding and directing the knowledge of the game and understanding the game is not that difficult. But I think where we put a lot of work in and a lot of conversation in our coaching staff and a lot of discipline direction among the coaches is how do we professionalize our players? And some of the attributes that you're talking about in terms of attitude are part of that professionalism. And yeah, when we see that come through on the court, that is very gratifying. And, you know, we need to see it more. We need to be even better than we are at doing what we do. So
that's true.
You know, our goal is constantly trying to professionalize our players in terms of their habits and their attitudes.
Yeah, and that's very evident, especially for players that are still chasing after their dreams, especially at their age. You know, from a budget standpoint, I think it's very important for them as well to learn these things and not just develop their basketball talents. So I think, Coach, I want to ask you as well, what is winning to you? Besides the scoreboard, you know, what you see up there, what is winning?
Well, it's growth, I think, you know, and you can measure that in obviously the scoreboard and what happens there. But I think that anytime we're growing and improving and gaining ground on what we're trying to learn, we're winning. And that's why so many people, not just me, but so many people talk about, you know, losing as a great teacher, as a great educator. And in a way, when you're losing, as long as you learn the lessons from the experience of losing, you're winning. You know, you're advancing yourself. So I mean, it's very, you know, well and good to define winning through the measurements of victories in games. And I think that's important because that's the assessment of competition. And I believe we are competitive beings as human beings. But I think that winning, you know, is much more than just coming out on top in a competition.
Yeah. How does a conversation look like between you and your players, especially during the first few periods when you sat there and, you know, you see your players sit down on the benches? What was the conversation like when you first began your coaching career at Ateneo?
In the beginning, you know, I was very much the same coach I had been from coaching, you know, more than 2.5 decades of professionals. And yep. so I tended to try and communicate on that level. And I was missing the target, because in that communication, there was a built-in expectation that they had knowledge and that they had experience that they actually didn't have. And I had to step back, and I had to, you know, gain an understanding that these kids needed first to be students, as they were at the university, which is, you know, more logical than people think, that they had Absolutely. To be students first. And that meant that I had to be a teacher first and not a coach.
Absolutely.
And so yep. communication very quickly, you know, after that first year, moved from me speaking to them as a coach who expected them to be able to do and to know certain things, to a tone where, you know, I was taking the approach that they didn't know much. And certainly collectively, they didn't know much. And I assumed the responsibility then of going back more to the detail and more to the basics of the knowledge that I was trying to convey, rather than assuming that, you know, that they already knew and understood some things.
Yeah. Did you see yourself more than as a coach, probably like a mentor or father to them?
You know, that gets into labeling, and I'm not really big on that sort of thing. It's a job for me. It's a job that I love and I'm passionate about, but I understand mm-hmm. that I'm not their father. You know, that they, God willing, they all have fathers, and I'm not cast in that role. And a mentor is something that I don't think that you strive to do. I think that you can only be a mentor when the person that you are teaching accepts you as a mentor, because it goes beyond the role of teacher or beyond the role of coach. It becomes something of an advisor in many facets of life. So I think for some players, I probably have become that. And for others, probably not. But essentially, my job and my role is to be a coach teacher. And it involves the principles and the knowledge of the game of basketball and the principles and knowledge of conducting yourself in a professional, disciplined manner. And so that's where I try to keep it. Beyond that, when players seek something, then, you know, of course, I'm prepared to try and help. But, you know, I have to be very careful, because there are other influences in their life, as in their parents and their professors and other mentors that they may have. And, you know, I'm far from a perfect human being. So I have to be very careful that I don't set myself up as some sort of model for them where I'm not a satisfactory option.
Yeah, absolutely. And that actually is from your perspective, I think that's also humility as well, because you understand that even though as a coach, you don't have all the power in your hands to actually guide them. And you have this understanding too that, you know, they have also other influencers outside of this basketball world, so to speak. So, yeah. What do you think was the biggest turning point in your coaching career that you actually, you know, when you step back and get a macro perspective of everything and you tell yourself, damn, this was, I think, the biggest, you know, turning point in my career?
Well, a career of 40 years has a few turning points. Believe me, it doesn't just have one. but I, you know, I go all the way back to near the beginning when I was an assistant coach in the U.S. and I was very impatient, and I was in a fairly innocuous way. I was arrogant, you know, because I wanted more than I probably deserved at that time. I wanted to be a head coach. I wanted to be in charge. I wanted to test my will and my skill against other coaches and you know, in the arena. And so I was very quick to take coaching opportunities that were probably above my head. And so when I first went to New Zealand in 1988, I had only been coaching for 5 years. And of course, I thought I knew a tremendous amount about the game. And my first assignment, there was a second division team. So actually, the competition wasn't, you know, very difficult. So I did pretty well for 2 years. And then got promoted into first division and then got, you know, the team that I was coaching, we got our butts seriously kicked for an entire season. We won 4 games and lost 18. And that was so humbling to me. And even to the point where I questioned myself severely, and I questioned even, you know, was I cut out to be a coach? Should I go back to my accounting degree and go back to the world of business? And and that there was a period of about, oh, I guess about almost a year where I was a little bit of a pariah, and I stayed in New Zealand instead of running back to the States with my tail between my legs. And I picked up a coaching job of an under 18 basketball team. And my connection with those kids, the season that we had and what they taught me about my passion for the game and how to give and how to teach, I think that was a huge turning point for me. That was the point at which I began the process of dedicating myself to my players. And it wasn't a conscious decision at that point. It was based on the fact that I had such tremendous love for this group of kids. And I enjoyed them so much. So I still needed to learn a lot. But that was, I think, where I really started to dedicate myself more to my players and my team than myself.
Yeah, it's almost like saying it's not about the destination, but more of the process or the journey.
Absolutely.
And I think, when you told that story and you transitioned to, or you started teaching this under 18 kids, that actually helped you remember your purpose when it comes to coaching. So that is a good story.
Yeah, definitely. It is about the journey. It is about the process. And the sooner that you learn that as a coach, then the much, much better coach you're going to be.
Yeah. Coach, I think you have the WHC, the World Hopes Clinic. What is your vision for that?
Again, it's teaching, you know, and it's working with another body of people that I have a great passion for, and that's coaches. And, you know, it's not unique to the Philippines at all, what I'm going to say, but it's, you know, because this is where I live now, it's germane to the Philippines. There are a lot of tradesmen in the sport of basketball that call themselves coaches, and they go about doing their job in a way that I think is flawed, and in large part, not necessarily their fault, because we're all victims of the landscape that we work in. When I first went to New Zealand, we were, you know, there was no internet or anything like that. We were, you know, so far out in the wilderness that trying to advance my knowledge of the game was really difficult. You know, it was by trial and error. It was by observation in the games. It was by sitting down and you know, with paper and just writing things down and questioning and evaluating. It wasn't like it is today where you have so much available through the internet. But, you know, that landscape in some ways was limiting to me, but because of the attitude that I had that, you know, that I needed to learn, I needed to improve, I was able to improve. Here in the Philippines, I think it's almost the exact opposite with the same result. I think we have a wealth of resources. We have a wealth of knowledge and information here because basketball is so dominant in our landscape. But at the same time, we've closed ourselves off in many ways because we think what we have here is so very special. And in many ways it is. We have tremendous competitions. We have, you know, such a huge pool of players, and we have basketball games anytime, all the time. We have television coverage of everything, and it gives us a false sense that we're doing everything well, we're doing everything right. And the reality is the game is growing rapidly in Europe, and the intellect of the game is growing rapidly in Europe, not in America. And I think that we tend to, when we do look outside, we tend to look at America, we tend to look at the NBA, and in some ways try to emulate that. And I believe that's a big mistake. And so on the back of that theory and that philosophy, I guess, it became important to me to try and share a different type of knowledge with our coaches here and you know, try and import intellect through coaching connections that I have in Europe and bringing, you know, very, very good European basketball coaches here to spend time with our coaches. And it's not nearly enough. And it's incredibly insufficient, but you know, for the resources and the time that we have, it's the best that we can do.
What is the biggest difference between the comparison between, you know, the American style or the European style?
There's a huge difference. The style of basketball in Europe is based on the intellect of the game. So the coaching is more about concepts. In America, it's on the physical aspect of the game. So the coaching is very much based on talent. And there is a clear distinction between the two. And obviously, the best of both worlds would be, you know, to optimize talent along with intellect. And it's, you know, we don't see that very often. We see it in the odd player in America, and then we see it in the odd player in Europe, you know. But it's something that we should be striving for. And here in the Philippines, because we are, you know, not very gifted physically, and mostly that's size, we must become much, much better in terms of intellect. And, you know, we're different than the Europeans because the Europeans are bigger and stronger and more physical, but they don't have the quickness, the length, and the athleticism of the Americans. We are lacking both. And yet we try to play in choosing between the two, we take the worst option. We try to play like the Americans, who we can never be like, but we can be much more intellectual. We can be much more like the Europeans. So, you know, that's where I'm trying to influence the game, and that's what it's based upon.
Do you think it's already somehow, we're already advancing towards that? Or maybe do you see any changes since you came here and, you know, started teaching?
I'm skeptical. Baby steps at best. Because when I look at the PBA, which is where we should see it more, I still see a league that is dominated by a style of play that is similar to the Americas. And you know, worse than that, when we have our import conferences, I see both the referees submitting themselves to the imports and refereeing them to a different standard than they referee the local players. And that, of course, forces the coaches to coach a certain style because, you know, if you're not putting the ball in the hands of the imports, you're not getting the benefit of the way that they are being refereed. So I think that this is, you know, really, really unfortunate as a basketball operational issue. And I don't think we can advance in any direction until we address some fairly fundamental issues about, you know, how the game is played. And then we can start to talk about how the game is coached.
Yeah. As a coach, apart from the X's and O's, have you ever thought of learning things that involve soft skills, like maybe how to actually, you know, communicate with players, how to understand their tendencies, their personalities? Because I think when it comes to team sport, it's very dynamic in the sense that you come across different kinds of players. You encounter players who have different experiences from different people. So how do you now, I mean, basketball is a very technical sport, but like in terms of having that relationship between a coach and a player, how does that go? Or have you learned something that is very significant in your
career? Well, I've been a consumptive reader for most of my life. You know, I have an inquisitive mind. I've never felt like, you know, I know everything there is to know. And that is on the psychological side of coaching as well as the technical side. Yep. And so it's always been important to me to be able to read people, to be able to understand people, to develop the ability to push buttons in people. So without, you know, formalizing that process. In other words, I never went out and sought a degree or anything like that. I've always been a student of the psychology of coaching teams. And, you know, I've talked endlessly with many, many coaches about their experiences and how they handled certain situations. And particularly early in my career, I sought out the advice of much more experienced coaches. And I, because I was in New Zealand for much of that, I had to go across codes. So I became very good friends with top rugby coaches and top cricket coaches, because they were the ones that had all the resources, and they were the ones that, you know, had the stories and the experiences at that upper level. And so, you know, I got great advice in those early days about man management and the manipulation of the psychology of athletes.
Mm-hmm. Who do you consider as your teachers in your life?
Certainly my father was, he was a basketball coach and a school teacher. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his approach, my dad was, he might have been the author of the old school book. You know, he was born in 1910, so he was around in the very early days of the sport of basketball, and obviously experienced a lot in the early evolution of team sports. And so he was a great resource as a basketball coach, but also as a teacher of young men. Larry Chapman, who was the first coach that I ever worked for, he, you know, I was his assistant coach at Auburn University at Montgomery in the States. Larry was a tremendous human being. He taught me a lot about how to treat people. And of course I'm referencing players, but you know, he was so good at, you know, his treatment of people in the broader community. And, you know,
in what way?
Just that, you know, through a good Christian founding, he was a very strong mm-hmm. Christian. He was a very giving person. He put people first, mm-hmm. and you never saw any inconsistencies between the way that he treated his players and the way that he treated other people, whether they were other students at the university or his friends or business associates. And it gave me a better understanding that, you know, more important than anything else, our basketball players are people first. And, you know, they're not assets for me to use to try and win games. And so, you know, that was really important. And then I think, interestingly enough, another one of the great influences on my coaching career was my assistant coach when I coached the national team of New Zealand. And he is still a big influence on my life. He's an excellent basketball coach. His name is Nenad Vucinic. He was half Serbian and half New Zealander. And became my best friend, but also was a great mentor to me. Younger than me, less experienced than me as a coach, but much more experienced as a player. And so he gave me, from the coaching perspective, we spent 6 years together working together. He gave me that perspective of what it's like for a long-term basketball player to be a coach and how they relate differently than somebody like me who had a relatively short playing career. And I learned a lot from him mm-hmm. in that regard.
Yeah, that's pretty unusual, right? When you have a subordinate or someone under you that you consider that person as a mentor, you know, a big influence.
Well, that's just the way it is, you know. I mean, I think that you have to be open to being educated all the time. You know, I've always said the day you stop learning is the day that they start throwing dirt on top of you. You know, and I'm open to that. I like learning. And, you know, you never know where you're going to learn from or who you're going to learn from. So I've always been, you know, a good student of life and of the game of basketball.
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, Coach. Did your father wanted you to become a coach?
He absolutely did not. And he, in fact, he did everything he could to impede the process of me becoming a coach. Well, first of all, he didn't let me go to any university and major in physical education, which would have been a pathway, you know, a more natural pathway into coaching. He wanted me to go to either one of the military academies or a highly academic institution. And I ended up going to Notre Dame in the States. So Notre Dame doesn't even have a physical education degree. So, you know, he managed to, you know, get that out of the way. So I started out my professional career in accounting with a business degree in accounting, and I didn't like it. And so, you know, when I decided I wanted to get into coaching, he was the first port of call because he knew so many coaches. And so I sought his advice and his counsel and said, you know, how can I do this and who can I talk to? And he said, well, I'm not going to help you do that at all. You keep your job in accounting, you stay there and you keep working. And so we were at loggerheads for the better part of a year before I finally convinced him that he wasn't going to dissuade me. And then at that point, he pretty much had to help me because, you know, he didn't want me to go astray and get involved with the wrong people in coaching.
Yeah, that's a very common, you know, relationship between a son and a father. You know, but then, yeah, that's something that I can absolutely relate to as well.
Yes.
As a son, you know, when I want something to get done, but then, you know, they have their own vision that they want for the children. But it's a good thing that he was able to understand that, you know, you want to actually proceed with coaching basketball.
Well, I think it's also a good thing that he made it difficult because he really tested my resolve.
Really?
You know, at the time that he finally relented, there was no question that that's what I wanted to do and that's what I was going to do. And, you know, had he relented easily, maybe I wouldn't have valued, you know, the profession and strived as hard to prove to him that I was going to be good at this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I value my relationship with my dad so much. You know, he was never my friend. And a lot of people might say, oh, well, that's a shame. But, you know, my dad, he believed his role in life was to prepare his sons primarily, but even his basketball players, to prepare them for success in their life. And as I've gotten older, I've understood that more and more. And I've probably adopted that myself more and more as well in my treatment of my players.
Yeah. That's very big because, yeah, when I heard that, it somehow gives me, you know, that realization as well that not all people that you meet in this lifetime will be your friend, but more so they could actually serve a different role in your life, you know, maybe a teacher, maybe.
Yeah, you know, as you get older, I don't know. I had a brother who passed away 4 years ago, and he's the greatest guy I ever knew. And I always marveled at the massive number of friends that he had. And I mean, they were really friends. You know, if I went and stayed with him, there'd be, you know, this constant stream of people coming into his house and just hanging out. And he would have, you know, these themed parties, you know, always around sports. And, you know, he would have so many people over. And I marveled at that because in my experience, friendship is such a valuable thing that I tend to think that I don't have that many friends, really. I have a lot of acquaintances that I get along with and I respect and I enjoy their company, but I would stop short of calling them friends. So, you know, friendship is a very, very valuable thing. And I don't think that I need to be everybody's friend or everybody needs to be my friend to have good, strong, healthy relationships. And again, you know, that more characterizes the relationship that I had with my dad. You know, it was very, very beneficial and very valuable. And I hope that for him too, you know, at the end of the day that he saw in me somebody that he took joy out of our relationship, even if it wasn't a close friendship.
Who is Coach Tab as a person outside the
basketball
court?
Very private.
Yeah.
I'm okay with my own time. You know, I don't mind spending time by myself. If I could do anything that I wanted to do any day of my life, it would be get out on a boat on the ocean and fish. I relish the opportunity to do that. I enjoy playing golf. I enjoy nature. I've been on in years now, so I don't get out into nature as much as I used to. But I was always kind of an explorer, you know, kind of an adventurer, without being a big risk taker. I wasn't into thrill sports or anything like that, but I love to get out and climb a mountain, you know, not a technical mountain, but, you know, I like to challenge myself in nature. I love to swim in the ocean and body surf and that sort of thing. But, you know, on a more personal level, I'm a pretty quiet individual. I'm pretty easygoing, pretty laid back. It probably belies the persona that people see in me as a coach. But it's probably good at the same time that I don't carry that intensity into my private life. I'm much more laid back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good thing that you mentioned that you love nature, because I think nature is medicine to a lot of people. And we're so lacking nature, especially in this kind of environment we're in. We have lots of buildings, lots of cars. But I think coming from New Zealand, you yourself actually witness or have lived a very big portion of your life spending time with nature, with lakes and ocean. So I think that's a huge part.
Very, very much so. And I think your point about our current state of affairs is extremely important. You have everybody in the world running around trying to defy nature right now. They're trying to avoid nature. They're disinfecting everything. They're washing their hands every 5 minutes. They're not breathing the air. They're breathing through a mask. You know, I'm fortunate that the house that I'm living in has a great indoor-outdoor flow, and I actually have a small swimming pool. I spend probably 80% of my waking hours outside, and I'm certainly not going to wash my hands. I need the microbes that nature has all around me. I need those in my system to keep my immune system strong. You know, I'm not disinfecting anything. I'm sorry, but you know, I want the challenge of keeping my body as healthy and as in tune with nature as I possibly can. And the coronavirus is part of nature. And yes, it has a detrimental effect on some people. But, you know, it's also something that our bodies, if we give it a chance, the vast majority of us, if we've taken care of our health and if we're not too elderly, you know, our immune systems can fight this thing. And that's proven in the data. So I want my immune system stronger now, not weaker. I don't want to weaken it by, you know, disinfecting my environment. I think that's the silliest thing that I've ever heard.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've become so detached from nature, especially the past couple of years. And that's why I think this is a war on consciousness and maybe helping us understand that, you know, maybe it's time to wake up and try to do things in a more sustainable manner. Because I think, you know, prior to this COVID-19 thing, this world is living in a way that wasn't just sustainable for a long period of time. And that's, I think, the reason why.
Well, I know that, you know, you and your profession, you know, you're very, very dedicated to physical and mental health. And this should be a wake-up call. I'm scared that it won't be, because I'm scared we're being misinformed about this too much. But this should be a wake-up call for people to do things about their diet, to do things about their daily exercise regimens, to do things about their physical and mental health, and to take on the challenge of putting our body in harmony with the world that we live in, instead of avoiding the world that we live in through air conditioning and buildings and roads and cars. You know, we should see an exodus of much of our leisure time from the computer and from, you know, the controlled environments of the air conditioned rooms. We should see an exodus from that and a re-entry into the world that God gave us, you know, of trees and oxygen and grass and I don't know whether we will, because I think that, you know, as I said, I think that we're being told to be afraid of everything. And it should be exactly the opposite. We should get back to embracing this world and everything that's in it, and helping our body you know, become powerful in this world that we live in, and not weaker and weaker and weaker. I don't know what your thoughts are, but those are mine, certainly.
Yeah, absolutely. I resonate with that very much, because I think the answers are already within us, that we don't have to seek for it. It's just that I think we're so blinded, and, you know, we've succumbed to that fear that we don't really see, or, you know, have a 360 degree perspective when it comes to how to deal with this thing. So, yeah.
Very true. Very true. That we have been told to be very myopic in our vision about this. You know, be afraid of it. Run away from everybody else. Keep your distance. Don't touch. Man, I think we should be doing the exact opposite. And I know that my viewpoint, my viewpoint probably won't be that popular out there. But again, I believe most people are not educating themselves. They're just listening to the, you know, to the, what do we call the boob tube, you know, the dumb information that comes through the television or through the computer these days. And and I'm afraid that there are people that are out there to manipulate this mentality of fear and and you know, run away. And but they're not going to find me in that crowd, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You're more than welcome.
Let me join you. Yeah, you mentioned, Coach, earlier that you're much more than a student in the game. You know, what is something that you're looking forward to learning in this stage of your career? Is there something that you're still, you know, hey, I want to learn this?
Yes, there is. You know, education continues to evolve. And I think what I'm challenging myself with nowadays is to become more of an innovator. I think through, you know, the vast majority of my career, I've been a copy and paste guy and try to improve on what other people are doing and try and, you know, do it better. But to look around and, you know, what's going to assist my players? What type of basketball, what type of system can I use? And now I'm, as I see myself as more of an educator now, I want my players to be exposed to a variety of playing systems so that when they go on into the professional ranks, no matter who they go and play for, they're better prepared. Their vocabulary is more extensive. So I'm trying to be an innovator now and trying to challenge myself to read the game of basketball, read the rules changes as they happen and force the game to evolve and try and get ahead of the curve in terms of innovating systems. And, you know, that's where my current challenge really is. And I'm enjoying it. And you know, I've got such a great coaching staff at Ateneo. And, you know, we're all thriving on that because we're challenging one another to be innovators. And so it's a great environment to be in. And I'm blessed, you know, that MVP and he wants to keep me around and keep me coaching. And so, you know, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I love that mindset because even though at this stage of your career, you're still wanting to innovate. And that, I think, is what's also lacking in some of these coaches, that they're somewhat satisfied with what they have. And so I think for you, you just want to innovate. You want to be ahead of the curve. And that, I think, is a testament to who you are.
Well, I think that's what keeps you ahead of the competition, which in many people's minds, that's the goal. In my mind, it's not. But, you know, I still have to satisfy my bosses. We still have to win games and compete for championships. But in my mind, it's about the game of basketball. And I've always been more of a taker from the game because I've learned, you know, I continue learning and learning and learning and learning from other coaches. So now if I can be an innovator, maybe I can, you know, be one of those people that nudges the game in a different direction and, you know, help what the fans see and can appreciate and help with the players' experience. And, you know, that would be a wonderful thing if that could be part of my legacy as a coach and not just, you know, people say, oh, he won a lot of games or championships. But if they could be able to say that he impacted the game, I think that would be fantastic. But I'm short of that right now. I don't think I'm doing that, but I now have my sights set on being able to do that.
Yeah, I think you've already somehow did your part, because I think a lot of players that played under you, they have this high level of respect towards you as a coach, you know, and that is very evident in the way you guys play, the way they treat you as a coach, and you know, yeah, that's why I wanted you to bring in, I wanted you to come in here and talk about your career, because I think a lot of these players have just tremendous amount.
Well,
of
respect, you know, it goes both ways, and I think that's integral to a good coach-player relationship. And I talk to the players about that they have to earn respect, but I'm so willing to give it because I think it's important that the relationship has that basis of mutual respect. And you know, you talk about my players, and you know, one of the things that I'm probably, if I'm allowed to be proud of anything, and you know, you have to be careful that you're not too proudful. In life, but one of the things that I do take pride in is that quite a few of my former players have gone on to become very, very good basketball coaches in their own right. And I think that I have five players that have become national coaches of other countries, and you know, several other players who have gone on to coach professionally and successfully. And, you know, in a way, that's kind of giving back, too, because, you know, if they're successful coaches, then that means that they're making the profession of coaching better. And, you know, I think that in some way I've probably been an influence there. And so I'm very happy to be able to say that, but, you know, not satisfied yet. There's still more time, and there's still more kicks left in this this old carcass of mine. So there's more to do.
What are you most grateful for,
Coach Dev? That's a great question. My health, I think. I think there's been times in my life when it's been challenged and I've taken it for granted a bit. So the fact that I've lived 62 years and I consider myself a pretty healthy individual right now, I think that's a blessing. I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for MVP, you know, because I've spent so much of my career working for people that I simply think just don't get it. You know, they put only winning in front of everything else, and they had no capacity, and they didn't work at the capacity to be able to evaluate the people that they were responsible for hiring. And so the hiring and firing of players and coaches has been very, very, you know, random almost in my career. And Boss MVP, it takes a much more studious approach, I think, to that, and a much more intelligent approach to the people that he surrounds himself with. And I appreciate that. I'm very, very grateful for that. I'm obviously very grateful for my players. I'm very grateful for Ateneo University and you know, having a role to be a part of a great university and being trusted with the education of these young men. I'm very grateful for my family. You know, I was raised in a great family, and I know that they go a long way towards molding who I am. So I'm grateful for that. And my assistant coaches, who are my best friends now, you know, they form a big part of every day. I miss them so much during this COVID-19 imprisonment. And I can't wait until I'm back with them every day. They make my life so much better. So I have a lot to be grateful for.
That's great to hear. What's one thing or one lesson? There might be a lot for sure, but then what's one lesson that you've learned in your entire coaching career that you always apply outside the basketball court, maybe in your family or just in personal life?
Probably, you know, to be fairly disciplined in my life, fairly disciplined in what I do. And I think that probably manifests itself mostly in preparation. I don't like to go into situations and scenarios where I don't feel that I'm prepared. And that's something that was taught to me when I was young. It's something that my job reinforces all the time, because I know those situations when I haven't been prepared. Mm-hmm. I've been a pretty abysmal failure on too many occasions. And I think mm-hmm. applying that in my everyday life as well, that helps me with my diet. It helps me with my exercise. I know when those things lapse, when I've gone through periods where I've eaten junk food too much, or where I've let my exercise or the type of exercise I was doing, slack off, I paid the price. So, that probably characterizes me in terms of my coaching and in terms of my livelihood, the way that I do things.
How do you want to be remembered as a coach, from your players, from your assistant coaches? When the time is up, how do you want to be remembered?
The only thing I can say to that is, if I am remembered, just positively. That when people recall mm-hmm. my name mm-hmm. or the relationships that we had, that it's a good feeling for them. I don't care for mm-hmm. people to think that I was a major influence on their life. Maybe I was, maybe I wasn't. I don't mm-hmm. care for people to think mm-hmm. that I was, a winner or, influenced winning so much. I think that that's bordering on arrogance. And I've heard so many people say that, and certainly they have the right to express any opinion that they want. But I think at the end of the day, people are going to forget, most people. So, if they do remember me, I just hope it's positively, because I'm sure that there's people out there mm-hmm. in the world that won't remember me positively. And it's probably through one sort of failure or another of mine. And I don't think any of us, are out there living life to fail. Mm-hmm. So, I would want to apologize to those people that I, that if they remember me, it comes back in a way that isn't positive. So I think the flip side of that, that's all I can ask for, is that people have a positive vibe, when they recall me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you, Coach Tab, for your time. I mean, I just believe that, or I personally feel that a lot of coaches or people have something a lot to learn from you as a coach, not only in terms of basketball, but learning from you in this conversation, it only gives me an understanding of who you are as a person, not in terms of basketball, but also your life as a whole. So, I just think that in this conversation that we just had, it just validates my point that you are someone that I think people should model a lot of their lifestyle or how they view things, because I think more than a coach, more than your success, more than the trophies or the championships that you had before, I think what you are imparting nowadays is how to have a good relationship with your players, how to be a good person or just be kind towards one another. And, that I think is the most important thing, more than just.
Well, Denzel, thank you very, very much. Thank you for the opportunity to have this conversation. Mm-hmm. You did a great job. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it immensely. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. I don't want to overstate what might be my influence on people. It's a blessing to be in the position that I'm in. And, at any stage, if I can help people, then, through the work that I do or through the human being that I am, then that's great. And where I fail people and where I fail myself, then, certainly I don't want to be held up as any sort of role model. And I want to make my apologies when that happens. And it does happen. So it's mm-hmm. it's been nice to have the mm-hmm. opportunity mm-hmm. to express myself and appreciate your questions. I want everybody out there to be safe, but to be brave as well. And, get back to taking control of your life. And you have power that you don't realize that you have. Mm-hmm. And so, I wish all the very best for everybody, good health and good days ahead.
Yeah, and Coach Fab, we're also grateful on behalf of the Filipino community that, you know, I know that you're I'm not sure if you've got a
not yet, but I am a permanent resident, so you can't get rid of me too easily.
Not yet. Yeah. Permanent. Yeah. Well, yeah, we're grateful to have you here. I know it's been 4 years or five years that you resided here. 5 years now. So yeah, it's been quite a while, but yeah. We're grateful to have you here. I think, you know, without you, a lot of these coaches don't have a, you know, something that they can pull off in terms of skills and coaching basketball and life in general.
Thank you so much, Denzel. I wish you all the best as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish you all the best as well, Coach.
Thank you very much.
Be safe
I will.
And be brave.
All right, bud.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was head coach Tab Baldwin of the Ateneo Blue Eagles. I hope you enjoyed our chat. But if there's something that I just want to share really quick, is that I feel like a lot of people refer to Coach Tab as one of those greatest basketball coaches that we've ever witnessed in our generation. But I feel Coach Tab is more than just a basketball coach. And I've watched a lot of games from the PBA, the NBA, and the UAAP. I've seen a lot of coaches. But for me, Coach Tab is special because apart from his success, his championships for the past couple of years, whenever I watch him coach, I can see that his players, his assistant coaches really gives him huge respect. And I think that Coach Tab, based from this episode, he holds a lot of wisdom and knowledge, and he has a lot to offer towards the people around him, the people that he works with. And for me, that's the reason why he is a true mentor and a true teacher, and more than just a basketball coach. You know, I consider him as a true legend in the sport. And for me, basketball coaching is just really a tiny portion of his legacy. For me, the reason why he has been so successful is that he treats his players really well. He understands first and foremost that they are humans first, and he does not see them as assets for his career. He sees them as an integral part of who he is, and that I think is the greatest factor as to why people really really respect him. So I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Coach Tab, thank you for this opportunity. And for all of you guys, stay safe out there, be safe, and be brave. Again, I just want to remind you that to subscribe to this Everyday Athlete podcast. I will be publishing a lot of episodes in the future, whether that's optimizing your fitness, nutrition, lifestyle, and just being an active and, you know, just being a well-rounded recreational athlete. So stay safe out there, and just like what Coach Tab said, be safe and be brave. Take care.